After spending a month in prison, an 11-year-old Bahraini boy is set to appear in court for taking part in an illegal gathering, according to authorities. In fact, up until now, three children have been given 15-year jail sentences, human rights groups say. On this edition of News Analysis, we're asking how resolute the anti-regime movement is and whether the Bahraini revolution is getting the type of international coverage and response it deserves, and why.
Police firing tear gas at protesters, a familiar scene in the streets of Bahrain. There are reports of casualties every day from clashes between police and protesters. An 80-year-old woman died a few days ago after inhaling tear gas hurled into her house, and her funeral turned into yet another show of anger at the ruling monarchy. Demonstrators in Bahrain have been coming out for over a year now. They want the downfall of the Al-Khalifa regime, but other demands have also emerged in the course of the demonstrations. Many political and rights activists are in prison, and the protesters want their release. These people gathered in the village of Dayan Monday in solidarity with jailed activist Abdul Hadi Al-Khawaja and Nabil Rajab. Rajab was rearrested a week ago, just 9 days after he had been freed, this time for posting comments online against government policies. Human Rights Watch is calling for his release and the lifting of all charges against him. In the latest move to silence the opposition voice, regime forces raided the house of a prominent opposition figure and Secretary General of Al-Wafaq National Islamic Society, Sheikh Ali Salman. His response, another fiery speech.
We, the people of Bahrain, as Sunnis and Shias, Muslims and non-Muslims, under no circumstances will give up our legitimate demands. We want to be the source of authority. Nobody is allowed to deprive us of this right. You, the government, oppressed us when you refused to meet our demands. You refused our rights in executive, legislative and security affairs. You oppress us because you monopolized these powers. You oppressed us when you shed our blood and are still doing so.
But activists are not the only targets of regime roundups. This 11-year-old boy was arrested last month. Authorities say Ali Hassan took part in anti-government protests. The child spent a month behind bars and had to take his final school exams in jail. He's now been released until his trial later this month. Ali is among the youngest victims of the ongoing government crackdown. In fact, Bahraini forces, with the help of troops from Saudi Arabia, have killed scores of people and arrested thousands more since the demonstration started in February last year. But the harsh response has only sparked more demonstrations. The United Nations and many human rights organizations have repeatedly criticized the Manama regime's dealing with protesters. But the Al-Khalifa is still enjoying the support of the United States and other powers. Their inaction on the crackdown in Bahrain has only emboldened the government to continue to use violence against its own people.
Joining me now live from Washington, human rights and international lawyer Paul Wolf. Also with us live from London with the Bahrain Justice and Development Movement, Dominic Kawakeb, and with us via Skype from Detroit, President of the Bahraini Medical Association, Mr. Osama Al-Aradi. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to our guest in London, Mr. Kawakeb. A great part of the world media, Mr. Kawakeb, is calling this a battle between the ruling Sunni monarchy and the Shiite-led protesters, in their words. Is this how you would describe it, or is it bigger than that?
I think it's far bigger than that. I think that it's really quite unfortunate that the media has tried to portray that narrative of this being about a Sunni and Shia conflict, when of course it's not. In reality, this is about democracy and dictatorship. This is about a group of people who are predominantly Shia, because it's a majority Shia country, but they are not asking for a Shia state. They're not asking for anything along those lines. They're looking for democracy. They're looking to have the same rights as everybody else in the country. So this idea that it's just a simply religious sectarian conflict is completely wrong, but I think it's one that the government has tried to propagate as much as it possibly can. because it suits their argument, it suits their narrative. It makes it harder for Western governments to criticize the government and to do other things along those lines. So I think it really suits the government to make that narrative, but that really should not be the narrative. The people on the ground have stressed time and time again, we are Sunni, we are Shia, we are non-Muslim, we are whoever. We are wanting democracy, and that's why we're out on the streets.
Right. To Detroit now, Mr. Aradi. That brings me to the quote by Mr. Ali Salman, the main Bahraini opposition leader, and we did have those remarks in the report we just saw. He was saying that we, the people of Bahrain, as Sunnis and Shiites, Muslims and non-Muslims, under no circumstances will give up our legitimate demands. He says we want to be the source of authority. Nobody is allowed to deprive us of this right. You, the government, oppressed us when you refused to meet our demands, when you refused our rights, he says, in executive, legislative and security affairs. Because you monopolize these powers, you oppressed us when you shed our blood and are still doing so. A lot of issues raised in that small speech. How determined is the opposition to pursue these demands?
Yeah, I think it's enough really to see the movement in the street, to see how much people are determined to continue on their demands. The demands have not changed. The opposition and the people on the streets in their home, they are insisting on the change, and this is coming. No return. There's no return point that people would give away their demands. And you know, when Sheikh Ali Salman mentioned that the people in Bahrain are the origin of the constitution, and that was what the Bahrain constitution mentioned, that the people of Bahrain are the origin of everything, origin of the parliament, origin of the constitution. So he refers to the people of Bahrain, and that's what the government is trying to stay away from.
Right.
Just people, here we have people who want to stay in power, and they're trying everything possible to dissolve those demands, which is not going to happen. And one of the things that they try to do is to make this movement as a sectarian movement, as Shia are moving against Sunni. And people, and including the opposition leaders, had made it clear.
Right.
Even when the top ceiling of the demand, when they asked for a republic of Bahrain, they did not refer to even an Islamic republic. Ustad Hassan Mushaima, who was having the top ceiling of the demand that all al-Khalifa should go away and we should have a Republic of Bahrain, there was no mention at all of even religion or that we want an Islamic Republic here. But he refers to the people of Bahrain as the origin of everything.
To Washington now, Paul Wolf, there are reports that Bahrain's leadership is under heavy pressure from the United States and other allies to restart talks with the opposition. On the other hand, there is the opposite claim as well, that in fact Saudi Arabia and other allies are urging the regime to intensify the crackdown rather than to initiate any kind of dialogue or reform. What do you think?
Well, I would more tend to favor the latter interpretation, because I see Saudi Arabia in particular, I believe, sent troops to Bahrain. I think the United States is looking out for its own interests. The big elephant in the room, obviously, is that Bahrain is a very important naval base for the United States. So I think in terms of the U.S. foreign policy, that is going to be the objective. And whether the Bahraini people have a democratic government or whether they have a monarchy, or whether they have a government that on paper is a democratic government but operates as a very repressive government, as if it were a monarchy, the United States will put up with that because we need to have a naval base there. I think it's important to note that there's a very high level of hypocrisy right now, because we have the United States supporting armed rebels in Syria, at least supporting them through their statements, if not materially supporting them, in the name of democracy. But we have a peaceful movement in Bahrain, and the government is reacting very badly to these people, and I believe it's not necessary. It makes it look like the Bahraini government is about to fall because they're taking such desperate measures. So I really think that the United States should do more to take a public position to say, look, we do need our Navy base. We need to have good relations with you. We recognize that you are a sovereign country, but we can't go along with this. And we have to have some kind of a coherent foreign policy to support democracy. And the United States has to come out and publicly say that.
Right.
For Human Rights Watch to say that, I think, is a step, because Human Rights Watch is quite influential in Washington, D.C. So let's see where it goes.
Back to London, Mr. Kawakib, speaking about a sovereign nation when we're speaking about Bahrain, that has come into question. How independent is the Bahraini regime when it is deciding, for instance, on the current crisis, especially when there's a talk of, for instance, a merger with Saudi Arabia as part of a union? We had that news before. Do you think that the Bahraini regime is independent when it's deciding what to do with this political crisis?
I don't think really any regime in this world is entirely independent from anyone, but I think there is quite clearly a specific link between Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. The way that Saudi Arabia views Bahrain is that it's just essentially another part of their own country. And, you know, as we've seen in the past couple of months, they've been trying to solidify that through the GCC union that's been proposed, which the majority of Bahraini people reject. And one of the biggest demonstrations that we saw over the last few months, was in opposition to that union taking place. Thousands and thousands took to the streets and made their position very clear. And the opposition said as well that, you know, any union that takes place should have a referendum. And I think that demonstration in itself was a referendum, because it made it very clear the people's opposition to that. So I think that very clearly there is a link, a very strong link between Saudi and Bahrain. And I think also it's problematic that at the moment it's Saudi Arabia who seems to be having the biggest influence over Bahrain, and their influence seems to be to edge away from dialogue and to continue repression as a way of answering this crisis.
Right. At the same time, the latest news that we're getting in various reports right now about the Bahrain is the regime setting up the Bahrain Foundation for Reconciliation and Civil Discourse. I'd like to put this question to Mr. Al-Aradi now. Mr. Al-Aradi, this rather movement, or this civil discourse establishment, is said to be bringing all sides together to try for reconciliation. But is the regime prepared to give the opposition what they're asking for as part of that reconciliation? I mean, look at the demands that these groups are making, the least of them being the release of political prisoners.
Yeah, I think what the government is trying to do is to try to calm the situation, try to go behind the demands of the people, trying to make things a bit quieter, you know, and basically, you know, prosternicate or, you know, prolong the period without a real reform. You know, they already tried, you know, lots of things to do. They already tried a commission. They already tried to do a committee that would implement Batsuni's commission the recommendation. They tried to create a group of people, like the 300 appointed people, to try to do that reconciliation. And so they're trying to do things that are partial or fake, I would say, rather than partial, fake reform. That's what we're trying to do. And just to go around what the real demand of the people want. And that's not going to take the country anywhere, you know. The only time that real thing would happen is that really they have to release all the opposition leaders. They have to sit face to face with the opposition and meet the actual demands of the people. A fully and completely elected parliament, the solution completely of this corrupt government, a prime minister that has been there for 42 years, had to go away. These things, without doing these, accountability of all the crimes that have been committed against Bahraini people in the past 1.5 year. Who is going to implement that with the current corrupt government? That will never take the government, the country anywhere, and I am sure they are aware of that. What I think they are trying to do is to try to quieten the people in the streets. don't go, oh, we are going to meet your demands, we are going to do something. And that's what's going, basically going to take the country nowhere.
Right. Mr. Paul Wolf now in Washington, let's refer to comments being made by the UK's Foreign Office Minister for Middle East and North Africa Affairs. He said recently, the issues that Bahrain faces are clearly Bahraini in nature and need to be solved by the Bahrainis. It's not for anyone from outside to interfere or to suggest any way. The UK and the US position brings up the question, why is there talk of increased diplomatic military pressure against the Syrian government, but nothing at all against the Bahraini rulers? I mean, does that mean that they don't believe people have been killed or tortured in Bahrain? Does he prefer to condemn, in his words, police being attacked by the youth in Bahrain?
Well, I don't think those are the issues at all. I think the issue is that the United States has a Navy base in Bahrain, and Syria has historically been an ally of Russia, and the United States just can't get over its historical opposition to Russia. We seem to be permanently set up to be opposed to them. So I think essentially that's the problem with Bashar al-Assad. I'm really disturbed by this discussion of a Saudi annexation. I would call it a Bahrain, because it doesn't look to me like the Saudi that the Bahraini protesters are asking to be merged with Saudi Arabia. This looks like a maneuver by Saudi Arabia to take over a failing government of Bahrain and take that territory for its own use. And that is not in the interests of the Bahraini people. I can't see how that would be any better than what they have now. So it's also not a regional plan. This is a Saudi Arabian plan. And I think that the solution really, it only takes a few comments from anyone in the United States government. And I think the Bahraini government would turn its position immediately. So it's a simple thing to do. The United States doesn't really lose anything.
Right.
Simply taking a position a little more distant from the Bahraini government.
The question is, how far do you think the United States government is going to go, though, before it does that? I mean, right now we're hearing reports of an 11-year-old being put to jail and now facing trial, and at least three children being given 15-year jail sentences. I mean, this has been openly criticized by human rights groups, and they're saying that it's against international law. Of course it is. You would know as a law professor. But how far can the United States go before it does come out with this position that you're speaking of?
How long have we supported Israel? I mean, we need the base in Bahrain. I don't think that human rights is a significant factor in these kind of calculations. I wish that it were. I think that we can put pressure on our government here in the United States to do something about this, but I think there are very powerful interests that are opposed to that. We have the Navy base, we have oil, and we need friends in that region. So it's very unfortunate. I don't know what to do about it. It's a situation that seems to repeat itself over and over. And the Bahraini people are the victims of this. And my opinion is that this is not going, the human rights abuses that you mentioned are not going to be a significant factor in the calculations of the United States foreign policy.
Mm. Right, back to London, Mr. Kawake. But as I said before, the issue that's being put into the spotlight now, at least by the mainstream media, is dialogue, reconciliation, and again, the comments made by the UK minister there, that he's been saying, and I'm quoting him, we are urging all concerned parties to engage in dialogue, come up with a compromise. But the question is political dialogue and is that compromise the next step for Bahrain, or is it even viable now?
Well, I think it's the only option, to be honest. At the moment, this has gone on for, you know, nearly 18 months now. And the situation really isn't changing. And I think, you know, there has to be some level of dialogue. But when we say there has to be dialogue, what we don't mean is for the government to come along and pretend to the world that they've spoken to the opposition and they've listened to some of their demands. No, what it has to be is a very clear process of the government engaging directly with the opposition on all of their demands, on all of the things that the people are asking for, whilst at the same time having rolled back all of those repressive policies that it put in place over the past year. That includes, obviously, the political prisoners who are currently in jail have to be released. You know, that's the sort of dialogue that we're looking for. And I think, you know, the opposition have made it very, very clear time and time again that they will do a dialogue, that they will happily sit down and discuss, but it has to be meaningful. It can't just be a kind of fake dialogue used to try and co-opt the opposition. And, you know, you say that Alistair Burt, the Minister for Foreign Office for Middle East and North Africa, made the statement yesterday in Bahrain. And actually, Hillary Clinton made a very similar statement yesterday in which she said that we call for dialogue, et cetera, et cetera. But it has to be, an internal Bahraini solution to this. And I just really feel that that's not enough. And Western governments do need to try and push the Bahrain government to the dialogue table, because at the moment, all they're doing is more and more repression. And the opposition, as we heard from the great speech by Sheikh Ali Salman yesterday, who said, you know, the people will continue to come out on the streets and they will continue to protest. Like, that's not in anyone's interest for this to keep going on over and over for months and years without a solution.
Right, we're running out of time. Quickly, I'll go to Detroit now. Mr. Aradi, would you also say that dialogue is the only option, as our guest in London is saying? I mean, some would argue that with the current state in Bahrain, the regime has lost its legitimacy to even engage in dialogue. What do you think about that?
Well, as you know, the people are asking for the fall of the regime. You know, that's on their demonstration and their protest, because what the government did to the Bahraini people over the past 1 year is nothing but, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but everyone in the world and all world organizations know and commented on what they did to Bahrain. They are still insulting top people in Bahrain. Let me talk about, you know, Thursday. This Thursday, they are still trying doctors in Bahrain who were treating the injured. So, you know, is that a serious move of a government that wants to reach to a reconciliation with its people to continue all atrocities? They just killed an 80-year-old lady 2 years ago with excessive tear gas. You know, is that the way they want to reach to a dialogue with Bahraini people? Is that the way that they want to acquire the trust and the confidence of Bahraini people? Bahraini people really need a real move, real people who really are interested in the peace and in the progress of Bahrain, not in a government whose aim day and night is to oppress and suppress people of Bahrain. But, you know, and I want to, you cannot blame people of Bahrain. They want complete resolution, as they want to do to call for the fall of the regime. You know, would they come with a real move of real dialogue, not a fake dialogue that they are talking about? I don't think that the opposition, the main leaders in the opposition is saying no. There are different directions. There are top demands. There is a demand in the middle that, okay, let's see. Right. Let's see how, there are people who are ready to talk, but the government, I don't think it is serious in that. And the proof of that is what they are still doing in the streets of Bahrain, in the courts of Bahrain. That is not really the way to dialogue. You have to remedy what has happened. You have to bring, you have to at least implement what the Sunni's commission has recommended. There is nothing done with that. You know, where are the people who killed and tortured? You know, there is no real move. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, Mr. Osama Al Aradi joining us there via Skype from Detroit, president of the Bahraini Medical Association. Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. I'm afraid we've run out of time. I'd also like to thank our guest in London with the Bahrain Justice and Development Movement, Mr. Dominic Kawakeb, and also with us from Washington was human rights and international lawyer, Mr. Paul Wolf. Thank you very much, everyone, for staying with us. From me, Homa Lezgi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.